Israel, Baum im Schma Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation, and it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
And all of Israel, Amrim Shema Israel.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light. This public service program is prepared under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our drama today is a radio adaptation by Morton Wishengrad of Stephen Vincent Benet's story, Jacob and the Indians, featuring Alexander Scorby as the narrator and Jack Lloyd as Jacob. Following the dramatic portion of the program, you will hear a talk by Dr. Ira Eisenstein.
The American colonies, may God profit all who lived then. Jacob Stein, my grandfather's grandfather, came to Philadelphia from Rettelsheim in Germany, an orphan in a sailing ship, but not a common man. No, he had learning. He could have been a scholar among scholars. Then you may ask, why did he come? Well, there was a plague and a new Grand Duke. Anyway, they had left the teeth in his mouth. We are children of the dispersion. We know a black day when it comes. So Jacob landed in Philadelphia, a young man with fine dreams and learning.
Hannah! Hannah! Here is Jacob Stein from Rettelsheim in Germany.
Peace be with you, Jacob.
And with you, peace, Hannah.
What are you staring at, Hannah?
His face is pale and his shoulders are narrow.
Well, do you expect a scholar to look like a peasant? Sit down, Jacob, and we shall give you something to eat.
Jacob, what can you do in this new land?
Do? What should a scholar do? Naturally, I shall study the law.
Learning is all very fine, but it does not fill the mouth.
Hannah, you can dispute with him later. The man is hungry.
Ah, but he has a fine face. Scholar, did you ever hear the words of the preacher Koheleth? Rejoice, O young man, in thy youth, and walk in the ways of thy heart.
You see, she can quote scripture. Well, Jacob, what's your answer?
Know thou that for all these things God will bring thee into judgment. Therefore remove vexation from thy heart and put away evil from thy flesh.
Now will you get him something to eat, Hannah?
His learning still does not fill his mouth.
She's right, Jacob.
But what can I do?
My husband will take you to Simon Ettelson. He will put a pack on your shoulders and you will go from door to door.
What for?
To sell, of course.
But my life has been spent with books.
You will have time for your books. Oh, Jacob, do not look so downcast. Selling is no disgrace.
True, it was no disgrace, but it was not expounding the law. At first, Jacob would sit in his room at night with one candle and read the preacher Koheleth till the bitterness rose in his mouth. Myself, I'm not sure Koheleth was a great preacher, but if he had had a good wife, he would have been a more cheerful man. But that is neither here nor there. One day, Jacob saw his first Indian, a tame Indian who bought a ribbon from him. After that, Jacob felt better. He worked hard, and Simon Ettelson sold him trinkets for his pack. Now, Simon Ettelson was a pious man and well thought of in the congregation Mikveh Israel. And it happened one day that Jacob found him arguing with a friend over a point of the law.
I say you're wrong.
And I say you're wrong.
How do you know?
It says so in the Talmud.
Show me where.
The Talmud is where.
That's what you say. Where, the place, in which chapter, on which and which page.
Oh, never mind that. It is written that if a righteous man persecutes a wicked man, God stands with the righteous man.
That's nonsense. If a righteous man persecutes a wicked man, he stops being righteous and God stands with neither.
You're wrong.
You're wrong.
Excuse me, you're both wrong.
Huh? What do you know about it?
I was listening. It is written that if a righteous man persecutes a righteous man, God stands with him who is persecuted. If a wicked man persecutes a righteous man, God stands with the righteous man.
That's not our point.
I am coming to it. If a righteous man persecutes a wicked man, God stands also with the persecuted. By the very act of being persecuted, a man becomes the ward of God. For is it not written in the book of Ecclesiastes, God seeks out the persecuted? Now it says in the Talmud that Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Judah...
They stared at him, and he spoke and told them where they erred. For half an hour he spoke, with his pack still upon his shoulders. And never has a text been expounded with more complexity, not even by the great Reb Samuel. Simon Esselstyn listened to Jacob with respect, and then with admiration, till at the end he threw up his hands.
You are young David. A young David and a candle of learning.
I didn't mean to speak so long.
Nonsense. Come to my house. Don't say no. We'll have stuffed fish and raisin wine. For a scholar, even stuffed fish isn't good enough.
For the first time since he had come to Philadelphia, Jacob ate well. Also, he laid eyes on Miriam Ettelstone, and she was Simon's youngest daughter and a rose of Sharon. After that, Jacob came many times to Simon Ettelstone's house. But Maya Kappelheist came also.
Miriam! Miriam, where are you? Look, Miriam! Look at the present I brought you!
I speak no ill of any man, but this Maya Kappelheist, well, who lies down in the straw with a dog, gets up with fleas. A big red-faced fellow with red hair and a mouth for eating and telling stories about the Indians. Yes, he traded with the Indians, and it could not be denied that he was thriving.
Miriam, let's tell the little scholar.
Tell me what, Maya?
The law is the law, and the prophets are the prophets, but Prime Beaver is also Prime Beaver, eh, Miriam?
Maya Kappelheist laughed. It took the pleasure from Jacob's learning and the joy of the maiden from his heart. Then he would sit silent and burning while Maya told a great tale of Indians, and Miriam's eyes shone at Maya's words. Everywhere he went, it seemed he heard nothing but Maya Kappelheist and his trading with the Indians. So he went to Simon Ettelstone in his shop.
Mr. Ettelstone, I'm weary of this trading in pins and needles.
Is that so, Jacob? What would you have now?
I would have much more.
Yes?
Yes, I would have a wife and a home.
Look, you're a good boy. Now, if it's a question of marriage...
Yes, Mr. Ettelson.
Asher Levy, the baker, has a daughter.
Oh?
It's true, she squints a little, but her heart is a heart of gold.
It's not of Asher Levy's daughter I'm thinking.
I see what's in your heart, Jacob. You're a fine scholar. In the old country, well, I'm not saying...
If I were like Maya Kappelheist, it would make a difference, wouldn't it?
Well, Maya trades with the Indians. He's a little rough, it's true, but he'll die a rich man.
All right, Mr. Ettelstone. I will also trade with the Indians.
You trade with the Indians? You're a scholar, Jacob. Leave that to Maya Kappelheist.
And Miriam? Shall I also leave her to Maya Kappelheist?
Well, it's not settled, of course.
I will go forth against him as David went against Goliath. I will go forth into the wilderness. Let God judge the better man.
Jacob Stein, my grandfather's grandfather, flung his pack on the floor and ran into the street. He had meant to buy his trading goods from Simon Ettelstone, and now he stood like a man bereft of hope. And then he remembered Rafael Sanchez. An arrogant old man he was, with fierce black eyes and a beard that was whiter than snow, and one who sat in the congregation Mikveh Israel like an eagle.
Well, what's for sale today, peddler?
Man ba'i talmid chacham. A scholar is for sale.
Now I am rebuked, for you have the tongue. Enter, my guest.
That's all there is to it, Mr. Sanchez.
So, scholar, you cross a notion that you might live and not die, and all you see is a girl's face.
Didn't Jacob serve 7 years for Rachel?
Twice seven, scholar. Let me tell you why I came to this country.
Wasn't it for the trading?
No, for the promise. The promise of William Penn that this land should be an habitation and a refuge. Are you spat upon in the street here, scholar of the law?
No.
It is not so in all countries.
No, it is not.
The spittle wipes off the cloth, but one does not forget. One does not forget the persecutor or the persecuted.
I don't understand, Mr. Sanchez.
That's all right, scholar. In the congregation, Mikveh Israel, they think I'm mad.
Tell me what you want.
Look at the map here. There. There is New France, see it? And down the great river come the French traders with their Indians.
Well?
Well, are you blind? I don't trust the King of France. The king before him drove out the Huguenots. Who knows what this one will do?
I still don't...
Don't you see? If they hold the great river against us, we shall never go westward.
We?
We. We are a part of it. This is the new air where our people make a new beginning. It is something beginning to live. It is faceless and nameless yet. But it is our lot to be a part of it. You remember that in the wilderness, my young scholar of the law.
Then you lend me supplies?
Yes, and you will make maps of the new land.
I will, Mr. Sanchez.
Scholar. Scholar, you think you are going there for a girl's face. But you'll find what you don't expect to find. One pays for the land of Canaan. One pays in sweat and blood.
Perhaps they were right in the congregation Mikveh Israel for thinking Rafael Sanchez a little mad. It seemed to Jacob that the old man's words were a veil. But chiefly he thought of the rosy cheeks of Miriam Ettelstone. And then he ceased to think of her, but only of the Scotchman McCampbell who took him on his first trading journey.
Oh, I've been thinking, Jacob.
So have I, McCampbell.
I've been thinking of some of the things you told me. Did you ever hear of a rabbi called John Calvin?
No, I don't think so.
Too bad. It's a shame, Jacob. A scholar with honey in his mouth like you, destined for eternal damnation. Hold your hooves, lassie.
McCampbell and Jacob. McCampbell quoted Calvin, and Jacob quoted Talmud, and together they rode through the wilderness. And Jacob began to learn many things that even a scholar of the law may not learn. How to move silently through the woods, the girthing of a pack saddle, and the making of fires. Also, the look of dawn in the forest, and the look of evening. And it seemed to Jacob as they sank deeper and deeper into the forest that the Germany he had left behind was very small. It seemed to him that he had not known there was so much width to the world.
Yonder, Jacob, lies the great river of the west.
McCampbell, I know the meaning of Koheleth now. All the rivers run into the sea, but the sea is not full.
Aye, man. You'll be good enough to give me a drink.
Here, McCampbell.
Thank you. Ah, Jacob, it's a strong brown hand that gives McCampbell water. A good hand for setting a trap or firing a gun.
McCampbell, it's still a good hand for holding a book.
No doubt. But that's no scholar's beard you're growing.
It is wild enough, isn't it?
That girl would not recognize you now.
McCampbell, our packs are full. Let's turn back.
Still thinking of the lass, eh? No, Jacob. We'll go on.
Perhaps you're right. The river will be brown like the River Jordan.
And no end to the country beyond it, Jacob. It stretches to the limit of the sky, and it goes beyond. You'll be afraid, Jacob. You and me, we'll be afraid. But we'll go on.
All right, McCampbell. We'll go on.
It was a green world and a dark one that they had come upon. Dark with the shadow of the forest, green with its green. They sank deeper and deeper into the forest, and Jacob saw pleasant streams and wide glades, untenanted but by the deer. He lost track of time. Time was the look in McCampbell's eyes, and it became a strange look and a wild one, a look that was like the cry of the loon.
McCampbell, you're sick. Let me give you water.
Vanity of vanities, all is vanity.
McCampbell.
Ask now the beasts, and they shall teach thee, and the fowls of the air, and they shall tell thee.
McCampbell, lie down and rest.
A contemptible brand in the thought of him that is at ease. Stop holding me, Jacob.
McCampbell, you're sick.
Bury me here, Jacob's time.
Drink the water.
Face my grave to the west.
McCampbell, you're going to be well.
No, Jacob. There is a time to be born, and a time to die. A time to plant, and a time to pluck up that which is planted. Jacob, face my grave to the west, and tell them what you have seen. Say it's the promised land, not for our seed only, but for the nations to come.
He buried him on a bluff overlooking the river, and Jacob was alone in the wilderness. Then, in a season of bitter cold, with his last horse dead, he was taken by the Shawnees. Jacob took his phylacteries and bound them on his brow and on his arm for the death hour. The Shawnees tied him to the stake and piled the wood around him, and Jacob prayed for Zion in the wilderness while they lit the fire.
Thou who art the father of the fatherless and judge of the widow, into thy hand I commend my spirit. Thou hast redeemed me, O Lord God of truth. Amen and amen.
They lit the fire under my grandfather's grandfather, and the smoke took him, and he coughed. His throat was hot, and he called out,
water! Give me to drink. Water!
All men know the signs of thirst, and an Indian brought him a bowl that was filled. Jacob put it to its lips eagerly, but the stuff in the bowl was scorching hot and burned his mouth. And Jacob was angry, and he flung the bowl straight into the face of the man who had brought it, scalding him. There was a murmur from the Shawnees, and Jacob felt himself unbound, and he knew that he lived. It was flinging the bowl at the man while yet he stood at the stake that saved him. For there is an etiquette about such matters. One does not burn a madman among the Indians, and a sane man, they explained to him later, would not fling a bowl or chant a death song in an unknown tongue or put on phylacteries. And so Jacob passed the winter in the lodges of the Shawnees, and he began to speak their tongue.
Indian, what month is this?
It is the month of the berry moon.
How does that help me, Indian? Is it the month Tishri or even Nisan or what?
You speak like a madman. I say it is the berry moon month.
Thank you, Indian. A scholar of the law, and I do not even know the days of the festivals.
Perhaps it was the month of the berry moon, or perhaps it was the month of the bee moon when Jacob escaped. And now he was no longer a scholar, but a hunter. And when he thought of Zion, it was not as a white city set up on a hill, but as a great and open landscape, ready for nations. I shall not tell all, for who knows all? I shall not tell of the trading post he found deserted and the 140 French louis in the dead man's money belt, or the half-grown boy McGillivray whom he found on the fringes of settlement, or how he traded again with the Shawnees and got much beaver. Only this remains to be told. Not 30 miles from Lancaster, Jacob came upon a man with red hair on the back of his hands.
My, a capital heist.
What do you work? Why, it's the little scholar.
I've been long away, Meyer. What's the news?
Have a drink first.
No. I suppose you have news of Simon Ettelstone and his family?
Sure, sure. The old man has promised his daughter to a cousin of the Sasha's, a greenie just come over.
I see.
Well, we're well out of it, scholar. To tell you the truth, she was always a little too skinny for my taste.
She was a rose of Sharon, Meyer Kappelheist, and a lily of the valley.
Yet, strange to say, my grandfather's grandfather did not feel the pangs he should have felt. He merely sat on his horse and regarded the three Indians who rode with Meyer Kappelheist, and he did not like them. And he also did not like the way Meyer fixed his eyes greedily on the packs of beaver. There were 18 packs of beaver skin. And perhaps for this, or perhaps because of Miriam, Jacob refused to ride on with Meyer and turned down a fork of the road instead. When he reached Lancaster, he had reason to be grateful for this.
Yep, that's a white man's scalp.
Lying nice and pretty on the willow hoop. Well, stranger, you seem interested.
The hair on the scalp is red.
Sure enough. We got the Indians who took the scalp.
Know who it might be, stranger?
Yes, I think I know.
That's so? Well, you're welcome to it.
No, thank you.
Shucks, take it, stranger. Be sort of a memento to his folks.
All right. I'll take it back with me to Philadelphia.
What is your business with me, frontiersman?
The price of blood for a country, Rafael Sanchez.
It's you. Touch the scroll on the doorpost and enter, my son. What have you seen, Jacob?
Rafael Sanchez, I have seen the land of Canaan flowing with milk and honey. I've brought back grapes from Eshcol and other things that are terrible to tell.
Yes. What else, Jacob?
My friend McCampbell lies buried near the banks of a river, and his face is turned to the west. Beyond the river, there's country, Rafael Sanchez. Country that stretches to the end of the world.
Did I not say, my son, that there was more than a girl's face to be found in the wilderness?
She is to be married. But what's a girl's face besides this thing in my pocket? This thing with red hair growing from it.
Put it down, Jacob.
Meyer Kappelheist, and he was a strong man. And I am not strong, but a scholar. But I have seen that we must say Kaddish for him.
Yes. Yes, it will be done. I'll see to it.
You don't understand, Rafael Sanchez. I have eaten deer's meat in the wilderness and forgotten the month of the year. I've been a servant to the heathen and held the scalp of my enemy in my hand. I will never be the same man.
You'll be the same, and perhaps no worse a scholar in this new country.
It must be a country for all. For my friend McCampbell died also, and he was a Gentile.
Let us hope, Jacob. Let us hope.
And Rafael Sanchez touched Jacob upon the shoulder. Then Jacob lifted his head, and he saw that the light had declined, and the evening was upon them. And even as he looked, Rafael Sanchez's granddaughter came in to light the candles for Sabbath. And Jacob looked at her, and she was a dove with a dove's eyes.
the Sabbath keepeth Adonai.
Copies of the script you have just heard, as well as the talk which follows immediately, may be obtained without cost by writing to the Eternal Light, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we present a brief talk by Rabbi Ira Eisenstein, leader of the Society for the Advancement of Judaism in New York City. Dr. Eisenstein.
The Jacobs and the McCambells who pushed back the wilderness in the early days of our country's history indeed learned many things that even a scholar of the law may not learn. From the remote serenity of the study room and the book, they turned to outwitting Indians, hunting for furs, charting uncharted plains. Yes, the Jacobs and the McCambells got quite an education building up this land. But in the process, they forgot the month of the year. They were compelled by the pressures of their pioneering lives to leave aside the book and the study room and the refinements of the settled society. Those pioneering days are now gone. The nation has been built, and the last of the physical frontiers has been conquered. Now the Jacobs and the McCambells are ready to tackle new frontiers. Side by side, as usual, they summon their united courage, skill, and determination to push back the desert of ignorance, bigotry, and selfishness. They have created a magnificent structure of machines and techniques. The education they got, they have put to brilliant use. But now, that earlier learning, which once seemed irrelevant, must be reclaimed and revived. For it must be put to the task of making themselves and the world safe from greed and excessive rivalry. To do their share in extending the limits of physical civilization in this land, the Jacobs had to make difficult adjustments. Faced with the challenge, they went forth fearlessly. But for the Jacobs to do their full share in the tasks that lie ahead, they need only return to the spirit of their book and their study room. There they have learned the frustration of tyrants. There they have learned the moral causality that operates in the world, bringing evil to evildoers. There they have learned, and in the tragic story of their people they have learned, that this is one world, equally sensitive in all its organs, healthy only when all are well, and sick when even the least are stricken. They have learned the corroding power of hate, the sustaining power of justice, the healing power of love. It is time the Jacobs and the McCambells retrieved something of the learning they left behind when first they set out against the desert. The world sorely needs that learning.
Thank you, Dr. Eisenstein.